Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice. Hello and welcome to Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Today we're joined by two guests working on the front lines of fraud prevention and consumer protection, Kathy Stokes from AARP and Matt Mazenko from NomoRobo. Kathy is Director of Fraud Prevention Programs at AARP, where she leads national efforts to educate and protect consumers, especially older adults, from scams and financial exploitation. Matt is General Manager of NomoRobo, the technology company known for helping block robocalls and spam calls before they ever reach your phone. Kathy and Matt, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So Matt, for listeners who may not know, what exactly is NomoRobo and how did the company get started?
So NomoRobo is a company that's been around for about 13 years now. It was actually started kind of as a technology project as part of the FTC's robocall challenge back in 2013. So the FTC used to run these yearly kind of tech challenges, and, you know, developers from all over would submit different ideas designed to try to stop robocalls. And in 2013, our founder, who has since left the company, but a guy named Aaron Foss, developed a novel technology called SimRing, which was designed to protect VoIP phone lines, and won the contest in that year. And basically has, you know, just grew the company sort of from there, adding to the technology, making it so that it could protect mobile lines as well as VoIP lines, expanded into protecting enterprises and businesses as well as consumers. And so, you know, over time, it's kind of grown and evolved. We really don't do VoIP lines anymore because not a lot of people have them. But we do a lot of protection for mobile phones and, of course, now texts as well as phone calls. You know, 10, 13 years ago, texts were not a problem. Now they're a big problem, as well as protecting business customers. So, you know, for consumers, we provide an application that can run on any Android or iOS phone. And then, you know, for business customers, we, you know, integrate into their kind of enterprise environments and protect the phone calls that way. And, you know, kind of been around for a long time and, you know, continue to grow and evolve to, you know, try to match the tactics of the criminals.
Sure. Yeah, it's crazy that we have to keep trying to stay one step ahead. And just for any listeners that may not be familiar with the term VoIP, that's voice over internet. Is it internet protocol?
Yes, that's correct.
So it's if you're using your you know, the internet as your phone provider versus either mobile or landline. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Good. Well, Kathy, AARP has become such a major voice around fraud prevention and protecting older adults. How involved has the organization become in this space over the years? Or how has the organization become involved in the space over the years?
Yeah, it's taken various pathways, but it's been part of the core of AARP in terms of helping people sort of find their financial path, right? And be successful when they retire, that they have money to support themselves. And way back in the day of, you know, the snake oil salesman, AARP was involved telling Congress, you know, to watch out for these things. But over the past 8 or 10 years, we've really sort of reinvented and reimagined what we can do in this space. So the core of what we do is called the Fraud Watch Network. And that's a program that I run, it's in the social mission space of the organization. And we have 53 state offices around the country. And back about 8 years ago, there were 4 or 5 that were doing Fraud Watch Network kind of prevention education out into the communities. Every one of them are doing it now. We have hundreds and hundreds of what we call fraud fighter volunteers that are out in community every day trying to spread the message of fraud prevention and protection. We've got a podcast, The Perfect Scam, that we use as an education tool, a whole range of things. And we also have victim support programming. We've had a helpline pretty much forever, but about 4 or 5 years ago, we added small group support sessions to help victims and their family members begin to deal with the the emotional impact of becoming a fraud victim. And then I think even more importantly is several years ago, we realized that education matters, very important part of the solution. We cannot educate our way out of what is a $200 billion a year fraud crisis. And so we've been getting much more involved in systemic solutions. Our advocacy work has really stepped up just in the last few years at the state and federal level. So we're just growing to do what we can in the space that we have ability to do something.
Well, you know, as I think I've alluded to earlier, but it's just such a shame that there's a need for it. But, you know, glad that, you know, organizations like both of yours have stepped in to educate and provide solutions to try to combat that as much as possible. You know, we've certainly seen with AI generated voices, you know, increasingly personalized scams. It feels like fraud has become much more sophisticated in recent years. What's changed the most?
Well, I can start by saying where we really saw the change begin was during COVID. Everybody went online for everything. Some people were more adept at being online safely than others. It's, you know, a bit of a minefield out there. And also at the same time, there was something happening in the scam economy, if you will, where one of the biggest problems we have right now, it's worldwide, but Southeast Asia is an epicenter for fraud right now. And it came out of having all of these casinos in Myanmar and Laos and Cambodia sitting dormant. And Chinese organized crime came in and turned them into scam compounds. And they have revolutionized the fraud industry. And we're not talking just like some people in a call center. This is tens of thousands of employees, many of whom are human trafficked to do this work 18 hours a day, going after Americans, going after Europeans, with, you know, a single focus: get every last dollar from the victim. And so not only have we seen the perfection and the scale, but we've seen the impact on the end, you know, the victim. Everything is going. And so that's not just a personal tragedy. It's a family tragedy. It's a local economy tragedy. It's a nationwide security threat.
That's just absolutely chilling. But go ahead, Matt, please.
Yeah, it really is. And I think one of the most important things to keep in mind with this, and, you know, and Kathy's done a great job of explaining it, is that these businesses are businesses. They are run like businesses. They are illicit businesses. They are criminal businesses, but they run like a business. They have targets for their employees. They have bonuses for their employees. Like, they really run these things, you know, from the top down, like a business, and they have playbooks, and they have very sophisticated scripts and things that they follow. So they very much know what they are doing. And, you know, that puts all of us at an immediate disadvantage when we get a call from these people. And, you know, you mentioned earlier AI, you know, just like legitimate businesses use AI, they're using AI tool in there too, and they're using it for nefarious purposes. We've seen, you talked about kind of the deep fakes and things like that. Those are out there, and, you know, those will continue to become a problem. But in terms of what we're seeing, the bigger problem with AI is not those, but it's they're using AI to harvest the immense amounts of data that have been put out there on the dark web about each of us through, for example, data breaches. So rather than calling us and starting from a position of, all I know is your phone number, maybe your name, and trying to pull that information out, they're calling us with a problem, right? I have this loan application for you for $10,000 I need to verify, right? And then with information they've used AI to pull on you, they're going to start telling you things about yourself. Can you confirm you're still at this address? Can you confirm that these are the last four digits of your social? Can you confirm you still work for XYZ Corporation? And all of a sudden, we're on the back foot within the first 10, 15 seconds of that call. And that stuff is ultra dangerous because now they've immediately surprised you. They've got you feeling urgency. They've got you feeling emotional. They've got you talking about losing amounts of money that you may not have, right? All of a sudden, the game has changed. They've basically taken the kind of practices and tactics that, you know, would have been recommended to an average consumer 5-10 years ago from a bank or credit institution, and they've turned them on their head. They're saying, hey, we're calling to be your friend and verify this transaction. Whoa, right? So those types of things have made the current environment really, really risky, so much more so than even a few years ago.
Yeah, it is amazing. Now, do you think that today's scammers are successful because of the technology or just because they've gotten better at manipulating emotions? I'm sure it's yes and yes, but talk a little about that.
Yeah, I would say it's certainly both. You know, as I mentioned before, and Kathy has talked about, I'm sure she can add, you know, they know exactly what buttons to push. They have scripts to follow. They have the specific keywords and phrases they know to say that will put you in kind of that heightened emotional state. And that combined with all of the other stuff that they have from a technical perspective, I think absolutely has increased their effectiveness, unfortunately. You know, in a lot of cases, it has become for them a quality game now versus a quantity game. So before, you know, they used to try to call whatever, 10,000 people, and, you know, they would try to get 10 or 100 of those to give up some small amount of money or maybe some gift cards, those sorts of things. Very different now. Now they're calling 100 people and hoping they can get through to say 50 or 60 because they know so much. And now they're targeting retirement accounts, bank accounts, investing accounts, Bitcoin, things like that, all of which are generally a much higher value than, you know, trying to get somebody to walk down to the CVS and buy a $50 Apple gift card.
Sure. Amazing how sophisticated they're
getting. And I would say on the emotional manipulation front, they've actually had the same playbook for thousands of years. The criminals, since the beginning of time, know what to do to get a person to not engage with logic. It's the way our brains work. It's like, you know, 100,000 years ago, saber-toothed tiger, our brain doesn't want us to look at that tiger and go, huh, I wonder if it's going to jump on me. You know, no, we go right past logic and we go through action in an emotional center of our brain. Criminals have known that and they've used it. But before, they didn't have the technology to scale and perfect. So they're using the playbook that they've always been able to use, but they're able to target so much more specifically. They're able to scale so much more broadly. And so they know it's getting that person into a heightened emotional state, like Matt was saying. We kind of see three things that they all come together to make the scam succeed. And that's a contact out of the blue. You know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Your grandson Mikey's calling, claiming he's in trouble. He turns into a heightened state of panic. Oh my God, Mikey, I need to help him. And urgency. Grandma, I really need you to help me, but you've got to send money right away. I'm going to put you on the phone with the bail bondsman. All of that comes together, and that's what makes the scam work in everybody's brain.
Yeah, it's amazing. So why do scams seem to target older adults so aggressively?
Well, it's where the money is. Yeah, and I think for the better part of a quarter century, we've been allowing ourselves to believe that it only happens to older people because there must be some cognitive decline, right? Or they're just not tech savvy, or they're too kind to hang up the phone. We were looking for reasons to blame it on older people. And that allowed the rest of society just to sort of forget about it. Like, it's a them problem, not an us problem. Yes, older people are affected phenomenally, profoundly, but that's because that's where the money is. And that's where the money gets drained from. And then you've saved your entire life and now everything is gone. But they're targeting everybody.
Interesting. So Kathy, through your work at AARP, are there certain scams that consistently cause the most financial or emotional damage?
You know, the emotional damage, it's consistent across so many of them because so many of them are these long, drawn out attacks. And there an emotional relationship develops. Quite often, that's the intent of the scam, to draw somebody into a relationship and over time develop trust and then, you know, give them an opportunity to invest in a way that this guy's uncle is investing in crypto because he knows the algorithm, something like that. Or it's the, you know, the your account is under attack. It looks like there's some really terrible, nefarious things going on, and it looks like you're responsible. So you're going to have to work with us and get your money out of the accounts. So it's all very in-depth, and the kinds where it's like a bank imposter that turns into a government imposter, all of that over periods of days, weeks, months, it's an emotional play. You know, it's first it's bad guy, I'm really scared, oh my God, and now this is the person that's going to get me through this terrible mess until I can get all my money back in the end and clear my name.
Amazing. So most of us do get spam calls every day. How bad is the problem really?
It kind of depends on, you know, who you are to some degree and how much your phone number is out there. And kind of, you know, what you do. If you're more active online, it kind of seems like an obvious conclusion, but it's true, then you probably will get more spam calls. You know, if you've registered a business somewhere, or, you know, you've put a phone number on a website somewhere, it's likely that you're going to get more spam calls. You know, some of the tactics of calling a lot of people at a time, those are still out there. We still see those. We don't see them as much as we used to, but we still see them out there. I know personally myself, I still probably get two or three a day, you know, so 10, 15 a week. So, you know, the numbers can kind of vary seasonally. And, you know, interestingly, after COVID, we did see kind of, or during and after COVID, we did see somewhat of a decline. It did affect the bad guys while they were kind of retooling. But they continue to go up year over year. We still can, you know, see them continue to increase, unfortunately. But, you know, probably the more interesting trend there is that we are seeing spam texts now reach levels where they are, depends on when you look, but they are roughly even with calls now. And they are in some cases starting to eclipse calls. So, you know, the attack vector has both shifted and increased, in that the calls haven't gone down, but now we also have texts to deal with, and there are as many of them as there are the calls. And so we're getting hit kind of doubly as much and from two different fronts, which is, you know, obviously problematic.
Sure. So Matt, for people who aren't familiar with the technology, how does NomoRobo actually stop robocalls before they even reach us?
Sure. So we have a few different things that we look at from a data perspective, and then we apply those, for example, through our applications to do the actual protection. So NomoRobo, we maintain what we call a honeypot, which is about 300,000 phone numbers, give or take. And those are phone numbers that we've owned for a very long time. They haven't belonged to a human in, you know, say 10 years. They've certainly not opted in to receive any calls or receive any texts. So basically, they're just sitting out there and they're waiting to receive phone calls. And what that means is when we see a honeypot number get a phone call, we're almost completely sure that the number that is calling that honeypot is a bad guy.
That's fascinating.
Because there would be no reason for them to call this number that really the world shouldn't know exists. And so when we then get those calls, we do a couple of things with them. One thing that we do is we record them. And so we literally listen to what they are saying with some audio analysis engines that we've built. We also transcribe the calls, and that allows us to create what we call an audio fingerprint. And with that audio fingerprint, within the first varies, but say 5 to 6 seconds of listening to that call, we can, you know, instantly tell whether it's good or bad. And if it's bad, obviously we block it. We add the phone number to our block list. And so then when a NomoRobo customer receives a call from that phone number on their phone, we see the phone number and we go, nope, this is bad, and we block it for them. Now, in some cases, they'll be getting a call from a different number, or maybe it's the first time we've seen a phone number, or what have you. And so then we have a second line of protection, which we call call screening. And it's basically exactly what it sounds like. The phone call hits the application. The application, before it turns it over to the person being called, steps in and says, "Hi, you are calling someone who's using NomoRobo for call protection. Please tell us who you are and why you're calling." And that has the effect of doing a couple of things. First of all, is if it is a pre-recorded or a true robocall, we will get that audio. We'll do that same audio fingerprint comparison. And again, we'll know very quickly if it's good or bad and we can block it. But the other thing is if it is an actual human or it's a person that's trying to, you know, get you on the phone and talk to you, they will almost always hang up at that point in time because they know you've got some level of protection. You're probably a harder target than someone else. And they'll basically just hang up because they know it's going
to the next one
that they don't have. You know, it's like I say a lot. It's almost like having a doorbell camera to protect packages, right? If your neighbor doesn't have one and you have one, they're probably going to take the package off your neighbor's porch and not yours. And it's the same thing here. And then the third thing we do is we protect against SMS messages. So whenever an SMS message hits your phone, we run it through a bunch of stuff that we have and we take a look at it and decide if, hey, this is something that we should put in your inbox, or if it looks weird or suspicious, we put it in spam to kind of give you that extra heads up that, hey, when you do look at this, look at it a bit more suspiciously, don't click on any links, those sorts of things.
Sure. And SMS, just for people that might not be familiar with the term, is basically a text message, right?
Text message, exactly.
Yep. Yep. So what are the biggest red flags that people should immediately pay attention to during a suspicious call or interaction?
Well, I would say if the number calling you is not a number you know, that's a red flag. Don't interact with it. Even if you're willing to take the risk that it's a scam and you just want to mess with them for a little while thinking that that'll waste their time, the criminals are looking at how long you engage. Even if you're on for 5 seconds and you hang up, that's 5 more seconds that shows you as a valuable potential number. And so your number's getting sold again and again amongst all these criminals that have all these data files that they're collecting.
Interesting.
So first red flag is if it's not anybody that you know, don't pick it up. Let it go to voicemail. Let NomoRobo screen it and make them not leave a voicemail. You can take it from there, Matt, but like maybe once you're on the call.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's anything. You have to be, unfortunately, we have to be skeptical of any phone number that calls us, right? Especially like Kathy said, if it's a number we haven't seen before or we don't recognize, we should immediately be skeptical. And if it's something that seems, you know, even slightly outlandish, or it seems too good to be true, or it seems too urgent, or it seems too strange, you know, again, that's kind of an immediate indicator. You know, the grandkid at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, again, we all, you know, I don't have any grandkids yet, but, you know, we all kind of know our family members and know those things. And, you know, if it just seems weird, it probably is weird. And, you know, one of the things we have continued to say, even as tactics adapt, is don't be afraid to hang up and call back. Even if it is, say, someone purporting to be your grandchild calling and saying they're in a place, what prison are you in? What jail are you in? And call
that
number back. Call that police department. Call whoever and see if you can figure out or ascertain exactly what the truth is. You know, same with, we have this $10,000 loan application. Okay, great. Exactly what bank is this? Look them up, call the customer service line, and, you know, attempt to verify it yourself. Any time that it, you know, something just seems kind of suspicious or weird, or like you have to decide right now, that's a really good sign that somebody's trying to pull one over on you, and you should probably dig in your heels, slow down, stop, and look for a way to, you know, get better kind of information on whatever that person is saying.
But boy, it's got to be jarring if you hear, you know, you've used the example of a grandson at 3 a.m. If you hear that voice, you know, and you're awakened out of, you know, in that particular scenario, out of a deep sleep. I mean, they're using deep fakes and AI and such. But if you hear a voice that you do recognize, I'm sure it's jarring, and it's easy for people to kind of go down that path, which obviously is going to lead to tragedy for them, at least financial tragedy.
Yeah, it is. And that's, and you know, that's a point in time when we really need to kind of like, try to, it can be hard, right? Like Kathy said earlier, we need to unplug from that emotional state and try to get back into a logical state. And that's when, for those types of fakes in particular, one of the things that we advise people to do is just as a family, right, an extended family, have code words that you use, right? So you can say to that, grandchild, what's the code word? And if they don't know the code word, they're obviously not real. Or ask something that only they would know. What position did you play in football in high school, right? If, especially if it's somebody in Southeast Asia, they probably don't even know the positions on, say, an American football team. But those types of things, you need to kind of think, figure out what's a way I can figure out whether this is real or not. And then, you can get yourself out of that situation fairly quickly if you're able.
Sure, sure. So what's the best thing someone can do if they think they may have already engaged with a scam caller or texter?
Yeah. Well, if there has been engagement and as a result, money has been stolen, identity has been stolen, that is a crime. And we all need to get into the mindset that this is a crime and it should be reported to law enforcement. Even if we go to law enforcement and they say, well, there's really not anything we can do, they need to hear that it's happened. You need a record that it's happened. There is one state in the nation that has recently established a victim restitution fund for fraud victims. I would hope to see more of that, maybe at a more local level, maybe at the federal level someday. Make the report so you can have the proof. And by making the report, they're becoming more aware of this problem. The Federal Trade Commission says maybe 2-6% of people who are fraud victims ever report.
Interesting. Okay.
And if it's only 2% and they think it's a $12 billion problem, well, they revise that every year by saying, applying underreporting, it's not a $12 billion loss every year. It's a $200 billion loss every year. That money is being stolen. And so recognize that it's a crime and report it. Seek help. You can call the Fraud Watch Network helpline at AARP to get guidance on what to do. Talk to a human being. Maybe we can put that phone number in the notes for folks. You don't have to be an AARP member or of any certain age to get the help you might need in that moment.
Interesting. And I would imagine for, folks and, even, I don't know about especially older adults, but it's probably embarrassing. If you've been, scammed, you probably think, man, why did I do that? And it, that probably could be a barrier for people wanting to report it or wanting to admit to it, depending upon the magnitude of it.
So yes, absolutely. This is a huge problem. But if we started thinking less about, I can't believe I just got scammed, and we start going, oh my God, someone just stole $50,000 from me. If we can understand that it's a crime and it's not our fault, because it absolutely is not our fault, then we have the right framing and we can reduce that sense of guilt or embarrassment and want action.
Sure. Makes perfect sense. So why did NomoRobo and AARP decide to team up? What are you offering as part of this collaboration?
So it's a really nice collaboration in that we're working kind of across all of the different aspects of AARP. So kind of the core offering that we're providing to AARP members is a really nice discount on a subscription to the NomoRobo application. So that's kind of the first piece. And what that does is that allows any AARP member to get the protection that we provide that's going to stop those calls before you even touch your phone, that's going to put those texts in a place where you don't have to deal with them, at a really great price that's, affordable and gives kind of that complete peace of mind and protection. But beyond that, what we're also doing is we're providing AARP access to kind of our vast network of sensors. So access to the honeypot recordings that we see and hear, transcripts of those, kind of intelligence on kind of what the latest things that we see coming in are, so that when one of their members calls the Fraud Watch Network and says, hey, I got this call that says such and such, or I got this text, is this a scam or is it legit? They can look at what we're seeing. They have direct access to all of our stuff, and they can give their members, you know, that intelligence over the phone or whatever they need to do, so that they have all of that kind of at hand. And same, they can take, you know, kind of the latest threats and calls and such that we're seeing, and they can, as they like, push those out to their members, tell their members, hey, you know, put it on their website. Hey, we're seeing this particular scam is hitting right now. Like, be aware of this. If you see this on your phone, if you hear this in a message, know that it's bad. So we're really trying to work across all of the angles to not just, you know, provide kind of that end protection, but also provide education, also provide information, and kind of create the broadest sort of landscape that we can around, you know, information sharing and making sure people know everything that's going on out there.
Sure, sure. And Kathy, I'm curious, as Director of Fraud Prevention Programs at AARP, so let's say a new scam pops up, or a new twist on a scam of some sort, how do you communicate and kind of, you know, have that red alert out there to the world? Do you use social, you know, do you try to get local news programming to pass that along? How do you activate and communicate that to the world?
Yeah, and to all of that, the answer is yes. We try to hit people in every possible channel that they're in. We often, or twice a year, this time three times a year this year, we do satellite media tours to get out specific messaging, and we might hit 50 markets in a single day. And quite often they're like micro markets too. So you're getting to people in on AM radio sometimes, which is really cool. We have social media that we use. We have this helpline program that I mentioned, and they do what we call early warning calls. So if there's a trend that's popping through the helpline, through what they're seeing with the Nomo Robo data, they can do a robocall for good out to maybe 100,000 AARP members and say, this is what's happening in your geography this week. Keep an eye out for it.
Sure. Interesting.
So we try to do it at that sort of personal level, and also sort of more broadly through media and third parties.
That's great. So this is a question that every Roundtable Talk guest gets. Matt, let's start with you. What are you looking forward to as you age?
Great question. I think, sort of broadly speaking, I'm always looking forward to kind of what's next. My path into where I am today has kind of been shaped by that. When I was a young lad many moons ago, I was very fortunate that my father was an electrical engineer. And so he would on the weekends bring home a computer, an old Apple II that my brother and I can play with. And so, you know, we taught ourselves how to program. We taught ourselves how computers worked. And, you know, from there, I've always kind of been very curious. I'm like, well, what's this lead to next? What's that lead to next? It's how I got into mobile phones. You know, in the late 90s, I was a software developer doing web programming. But I was like, this phone thing, I think this is going to take off someday. And this is going to be pretty interesting.
So you're the one that predicted it.
Yeah, one of many, maybe. But I was able to convince the CEO of our company at that time to let me take a little money and a couple of developers and kind of do a little incubator to play around with this stuff, build some applications and whatnot, you know, which at that point in time were very, very rudimentary. But, you know, I've always kind of like just followed that path. Like, what's going to happen next? What is the next big thing? Obviously, now it's AI, all sorts of pros and cons with AI. But, you know, it's like, where does this lead? What happens after AI? What do we do with AI? How do we do it responsibly? You know, I'm always kind of like looking to see what's on the horizon or over the horizon and figure out like how to engage with it and what it's good for and not good for, and just kind of keep pushing forward.
That's great. So, Kathy, what are you looking forward to as you age?
I think I look at it less as I age and more as I just continue living. And, on the professional front, this space of fraud is my absolute passion. I have so much more that I want to do. So I have friends that are already like considering retiring, or they've already got the date on the calendar, and I'm like, oh no, that's not for me. I got too much to accomplish. There's so much we need to do. And being connected as I am with AARP, that does have a lot of power in a lot of places, I think we can still get so much more done. But on the personal front, like I'm singing in a band and I am having such a ball and I want to get more involved in music as I continue living.
I love that. So and we touched on this a bit, but one thing that I think people misunderstand is that scams aren't about intelligence. It's about manipulation. Why is it that important to remember for people?
I think it's so evident that we haven't looked at it that way for so long that we've deprioritized it. Had 25 years ago when the scams really started hitting because of the cyber-enabled element of it, had we seen it, had we had leadership around this country talking about it as a crime, we wouldn't have the deficit of action that we have now. We all need to understand it happens to everybody of every demographic. The smartest, most educated people, it happens to because it's not about intellect or education or knowledge. It's about knowledge to a degree. The more we talk about this stuff, the more we're aware, and maybe that gives us a level of protection. But it's not because of an attribution of the individual. It's because the criminals have a playbook and it works.
Sure, sure. That's well said. So, Kathy, have you heard stories from victims that really changed your perspective on how emotionally damaging these experiences can be over time?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. And I could not work in day-to-day talking with victims. People on my team do. People in the fraud victim support side of our work do. It's just too hard for me. But I've had a wonderful opportunity to work directly with victims who have come through our programming and have developed a sense of agency, and they've got their confidence back, and they're like, my story matters, and I want to get out there and tell it. Help me do that. And so I've been working with victims in that capacity, and I see the damage that has happened to them, but I've also seen their resilience. We're doing a program called Fraud Wars on social media, actually specifically on YouTube, that I would love people just Google AARP Fraud Wars. These are vignettes of first-person victim narratives. And if you can just understand from that perspective what that person went through, what their family went through, what they're dealing with now, I think we'd all be in such a better place to understand why we need to do so much more.
Sure, sure. And, you know, it's sometimes very simple things that need to be done. Early on in my career, I worked on an auto theft prevention and just locking your car and you know, just, you know, some of those kinds of things. It is just kind of being present and making sure that you're keeping your mind about you. So what can families do to have supportive conversations about scams without sounding patronizing or overprotective? Because I'm sure some of that can be dehumanizing, if you will, for older adults.
Yeah, I talk with a lot of people who are sort of in that situation of being the unpaid caregiver for older mom or older dad, and that their sort of rote reaction to scams is to tell their parents, just don't answer the phone. Don't click on that link. And then I ask them, well, what context are you giving when you say that to them? And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you're telling them randomly, don't answer the phone, don't click, don't do this. You have to help them understand this is the number one crime in the country, and we have to have each other's backs. I'm going to tell you as I learn about things, and I need you to tell me too, because we can protect each other.
Well said. Well said. So Matt, we've talked a lot about NomoRobo as it relates to older adults. Are robocall blocking tools something everyone should be using at this point or looking into?
Absolutely. unequivocally, whether it's NomoRobo or whether it's one of the applications provided by your carrier or you know one of the other companies in our space, absolutely you should have something on your phone to protect against those calls. Full stop. And, you know, like I said before, kind of about, you know, having a doorbell camera. I think that's another one of these things. It's just become ubiquitous, right? They're inexpensive enough. Everybody has one because unfortunately there are people out there that want to steal your stuff off your doorstep and they can pull up and grab it very quickly and leave. It's just as easy to call your phone and do the same sort of thing. So, you know, if you're going to protect those Amazon packages, why wouldn't you also want to protect the number one vector of financial crime, which is your phone, from the bad guys? It just makes good sense.
So let me ask you this. How accurate is it when I'm getting a call and it says likely spam, or I forget exactly what it says, possibly spam or something? How accurate is it that that is telling me that it is indeed spam?
The unfortunate answer is it depends, because everybody is getting that information or creating that information really from a different place, right? So, you know, we have the three major carriers here in the US, T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T, and they each have their own databases with their own algorithms and stuff that they're, you know, using to look at and provide those warnings. You know, the more independent applications like ourselves and others are using kind of, you know, different intelligence, right? You know, our honeypots and things like that. And, you know, unfortunately, there's not like a single centralized repository for those things is one of the problems. And another problem is that everybody kind of approaches it with a different level of emphasis. So there are some carriers that tend to be a little bit more conservative and others that tend to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of how quickly they are likely to label something as spam likely or scam likely or something like that. To kind of wrap all of that up, the better answer really is that take it seriously. If someone has gone, you know, regardless of who the party is, if someone's gone to the trouble to label that, you should probably take it at least reasonably seriously before you engage with it, before you give it any sort of information, because, you know, there is a better chance than zero that it is somebody that is not somebody you want to talk to. And so even just that little bit of extra warning, you know, should encourage us to take a step back and say, okay, if I am going to answer this, I'm going to kind of be smart about how I talk to these people.
Sure. And that was really interesting, Kathy, what you were saying, that, you know, even if you do think, well, I'm just going to mess with this person, being on there even for a few seconds, you know, throws your number into, you know, I don't know if it's the dark web or what, but out there for others to see that this could be a, you know, live bait, if you will.
That's right. And I think that's important to understand too, I put the NomoRobo app on my phone just a couple of weeks ago, once we were launching this thing. And I'm so glad I did, because it's scams, but it's also unwanted contact. And this time of year, at least if you're in a space with primaries and whatnot, you're getting probably a lot of calls and maybe texts that are political in nature. I don't know where I put my number, but I was getting like 15 texts a day. And they're legitimate texts from, you know, political interests. I didn't want to have to sort through them, so I don't have to anymore, because they go directly into my unknown messages folder, and I can scan down them. I just scanned down them a little bit ago, and there were 51 messages in there.
Wow.
And that was all political. It's like, thank you. I just didn't want to have to wade through it myself.
That's right. That's right. So, Kathy, what resources does AARP offer for people who may need help or guidance after encountering a scam? I know you referenced the fraud helpline, but talk a little about what resources AARP offers.
So we have a website at aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork. Tons of resources there. You can sign up for biweekly text or email messages that we call watchdog alerts that take one scam every other week and they break it down for you to help you understand how it works and what to look for. Sometimes I encourage people to just go ahead and sign up for it and then sign up mom and dad too. And then when you receive it, let that be sort of the reminder. Okay, well, when I talk to mom this week, I'm going to bring this up and we're going to have a conversation about it. We also have a scam tracking map, and people are reporting what they're seeing in their own geography. Tons of education on what the scams look like. The helpline is critical. We get 100,000 calls a year. And it's only growing. 877-908-3360. Talk to a human if you're not sure if something is a scam or isn't, or you're a victim, or you're trying to work with someone who's a victim and they're not believing that they're a victim. That's one of the hardest scenarios out there, but we can provide help for you.
Sure. Interesting. And I don't know if either of you saw the film Thelma a couple of years ago with June Squibb, about a woman who was scammed and decided to take things into her own, into her own hands to try to resolve it. And I thought it was a wonderfully made film. Loved June Squibb, but also just the fact that it was such a topic in the forefront that a major Hollywood film was made about it. I thought was really interesting, and hopefully that did some work toward keeping fraud on people's minds and maybe perhaps making people a bit more wary.
Yeah, I think the message that we have the power, we have some power here, is important. You had mentioned before, like locking the door. There are things that we can all be doing. Four or five things, if you did them today, you'd be 10 times more protected than you were this morning. But at the same time, it shouldn't be our job to protect ourselves when this is the number one crime in the country and we're using our technology as intended. We're doing everything we're supposed to be able to do, and yet we're at risk. So I think we need much bigger solutions than setting up a VPN or, putting NumeroBo on your phone. We need more.
Well said. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate your time, Matt and Kathy. But last question, let's start with Matt. What have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
I can think of a very crude way to say this, but let me think of a nice way to say it.
Say it however you wish.
Don't be an a-hole, which directly relates to you don't know everything.
I love that.
Life, every day you're learning more, you're learning things other people don't know, other people are learning things you don't know. You don't know everything. When you don't know everything, don't be afraid to admit you don't know everything and look for somebody who maybe does. I think that's kind of the biggest one for me.
But boy, isn't that the truth that when we're young, we think we're invincible and we think we have all the answers. So that's a great point. We probably know we don't, but we just feel like we need to project that. So
probably
thank
true.
You, Matt. Kathy, what have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
I think it's probably kind of the opposite. I wish I could go back and tell myself that you have a point of view, you have, you think differently, and that's not a bad thing. I think it was something that held me back for a long time because I don't see things the way other people do. So I thought I must be wrong or I shouldn't share it. I can kind of consider myself professionally to be a bit of a late bloomer. I could have bloomed a lot earlier if I had a little bit more confidence in saying, no, you've got something you need to tell people. They need to hear it so that we can do stuff about it.
Both important bits of wisdom and advice. So thank you for that. And thank you, Kathy and Matt. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. It's fun.
We've been talking with Kathy Stokes, Director of Fraud Prevention Programs at AARP, and Matt Mazenko, the General Manager of NumeroBo. Thanks again for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I'm Derek Dunham, and thanks also to Matt Campbell, our engineer, and Dave Schaffner, our producer. We'll see you next time on Varsity's Roundtable Talk.